You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games. Specters, welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots. I'm here with N7, the legend, as usual. And we have a slightly different episode. It's kind of similar. It's kind of different. I'm excited about this one, Sam. Sam, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. It's been, you know, a very long, busy week at work for me, which is why we had to put this episode off a day. So thank you everyone for, you know, the flexibility and patience while we try and bring you the lore.
Our live audience will notice, but the audio audience won't, because we buffer a few days before this goes out live. So, but we're doing it on the weekend. It's the weekend. Happy weekend.
It is the weekend. I hope, how was your St. Paddy's Day?
My St. Paddy's Day is all right. We had a little community thing and everybody just dressed in green and somebody played bagpipes, which I don't think is Irish.
Scottish.
Right. So, but bagpipes were there. I don't know. Speaking of St. Paddy's Day, we're talking about cybernetics this week.
And everyone knows St. Patrick was a well-known cyborg.
He was a cyborg. That's how he was able to chase all the snakes out of Ireland. They were afraid of his robotic laser beams.
He was also... Sorry, I was gonna make it a Pelham White Strike comment, right, like right. about him being gay and from the future.
Nobody other than anybody who listens to the Elder Scrolls podcast or is just like super deep into Elder Scrolls lore is gonna get any of that. So if you are wondering if a reason to get into Elder Scrolls lore, you probably think, oh, Elder Scrolls is all about like Viking looking dudes with helmets and dragons, right? Like, cause Skyrim. No, there's totally a whole section of lore that's about a gay cybernetic warrior from the future who goes back in time and murders a bunch of elves.
Blessed by the gods.
Right. So that is a thing. And it, yeah, if you're interested, go check out my other podcast because we got a crazy episode about it. But that's not what this is about. This is about cybernetics and bioengineering. We're going cyberpunk in Mass Effect.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've been covering medical topics for the past few months, but now we're entering this other section of the lore.
Yeah.
There was so much more to talk about than I anticipated when it came to diseases and medicine and the characters who practice it. And I looked back at the episodes. You know how long we've been talking about it? It's been like 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't have guessed that there would be this much medical stuff. And technically, this is like tangentially related. Like, you would have to have some sort of medical operation in order to install cybernetics. It's still kind of connected, yeah. Right? And sometimes you would get cybernetic implants for medical reasons. So, yeah, we're still there.
Yeah, we're mixing medicine with technology in this episode, talking about cybernetics, genetic engineering. And like you said, it sounds kind of cyberpunky. And Mass Effect has kind of some overlaps in some of the same types of lore. But, you know, I want to issue a disclaimer first that there's a lot we don't know, because much of what we know about these topics is in terms of the Codex, in terms of reliable narration, which the Codex is still filtered through the lens of Alliance Human General Issued Handbook. There's just not a lot of text lore about it.
Right.
You know, it's mentioned in conversations here and there and through different nonverbal cues in cinematics. But it doesn't seem to really be the focal point of a lot until we get to Mass Effect 2. It's mentioned here and there, like flavor text, like I said.
Yeah. Well, if I know anything about you, you've done your research and
I've tried.
You've dug up what if there's anything out there, you've probably dug it up.
I've tried. I've done my best. I will say that unless you go on a ridiculous scavenger hunt of the games and the comics, and you parse through hundreds and hundreds of pages of the novels, panels of the comics, and go through hundreds of hours of gameplay scouring for every journal entry, every conversation, even if it's like a 5 second or 3 second piece, then, and you're looking for just these topics, and you're staying like, that would require immense effort to do that. But unless you're going to do that, you're going to have a rough time finding much about cybernetics and Mass Effect, because it's not its own focal point for the universe, really.
Right.
But we'll get into the nuance of that. It's not as apparently prevalent in the Mass Effect universe as in cyberpunk or other sci-fi universes. But when I did start focusing on them, and when I did try and find what I could, I was surprised just how many instances I could find, or I did find, that seemed to linger under the radar. So it is there if you look. And hopefully this episode is going to serve as like a substitute and an aid for anyone in the next playthrough or on their current playthrough, that they can kind of just keep the keyword in mind when they're playing through and go like, oh, there's that conversation, or, oh, they're bringing this up too. Oh, the lore cast missed this little part. And by the way, we will miss parts.
Oh, sure.
We want to hear about it.
Absolutely. Like good scientists, if you can prove our theory wrong or needing an update, we would be excited to learn more. So please kindly update us if we do miss something.
So that being said, let's get into where we see cybernetics in Mass Effect.
Yeah, let's look under the hood. Let's get a good look under the hood, shall we?
Yeah, and that's a good segue because Shepard does have more rebuilt parts than a 67 Chevy. Shepard died. That's no surprise.
Wait, what?
And Shepard died and was brought back to life. And to do so, they needed to, you know, interweave a lot of technology and synthetic components into Shepard's being. And we even hear this from the Catalyst at the very end of Mass Effect 3, who's giving us this ultimatum of choices, and in which the Catalyst says, even you are partly synthetic. Can you imagine living without synthetics being part of you?
Well, he wouldn't have. They wouldn't have been able to bring him back. It wouldn't have been possible.
And Shepard, like, I mean, she even admits it in the very final stages of Mass Effect 3, and kind of like doesn't really admit their faults a lot. You know what I mean? This isn't something that Shepard does a lot, but Shepard seems to acknowledge this at the end of Mass Effect 3 that, yeah, that's pretty true. Like, I am mostly robot at this point.
right.
So let's back up a second, you know, from the end of Mass Effect 3. Let's go into the Mass Effect 2 after the Lazarus Project. So I'm talking about after Shepard has already been revived, besides those cybernetics, which we'll get into in a separate episode in and of itself. There are upgrades that the player can make in Mass Effect 2.
Right.
Which are cybernetic in nature.
Yeah.
There's three main ones that I want to focus on as prototypes. They're labeled as prototypes. Number one, there's heavy skin weave. This is how the game describes it in the little description before you buy the upgrade. Strong synthetic fibers woven through the skin, dramatically reducing damage taken from most attacks. These fibers also act as a metagel conduit, improving healing.
Handy. It's a little highway system that protects you and also delivers the metagel.
I'm imagining like a spider web weave, you know, throughout the skin that kind of like structurally keeps tears from spreading if you have like a, you know, a cut or something.
Oh my god, it's almost like it's just underneath the skin. It's not quite as crazy as like adamantium skeleton, right? But it's like a just kind of a mesh that goes underneath your a dermal layer. Like if you were cut open your arm, you'd hit it.
Can you imagine installing that?
Oh my god, no. Like the body probably had to be dead when they installed it, but it's an upgrade, so you're not dead when you get the upgrade.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, and you don't have the gameplay benefit beforehand, so
right.
Like did they lock this feature behind a paywall for Shepard?
I don't know.
Is this like your feature does exist in the car that you've owned, but you have to subscribe to our bonus plan per month to unlock heated seats? Right.
Or is it like braces where clearly when you get the braces in, your teeth don't automatically just go to the right place? Like maybe it's laid on the skin and then over time it sinks into the skin as the layers of cells like grow and die. It
seems uncomfortable.
Ooh, it's just constantly itchy. You're just
Oh man, it takes like hours even to get a small tattoo on your body. I cannot imagine how long this would take for Cerberus to like, or Chakwas to oversee surgery to install. He doesn't have that time.
It's probably all in a machine. You probably just float in a machine like one of the Star Wars vats, and then a robot just kind of like different robot arms just etch on different parts of your body all at the same time.
Yeah. Or I wonder if they like inject nanobots who install it in real time.
Oh, from the inside, from the blood. Yes. That way it starts underneath your skin. That would make sense. Yeah. Nanobot technology could do it. Or the nanobots just replicate and link and then create the weave.
And this is, and again, this is speculation because we don't know exactly how this is installed as well as the other prototypes because it doesn't really tell us. And there's another one. You mentioned an adamantium skeleton. Well, there basically is that.
Yeah, so it's gets even crazier.
Yes. Yeah. There's something called skeletal lattice. By reinforcing the skeleton with a synthetic weave, there's that word again, synthetic weave, bones can be made almost unbreakable. In the event of bone trauma, metagel conduits allow for bone regenerations in a matter of days.
If I lose too much hair, I might invest in a synthetic weave.
Where would that be taken from? Synthetic, not organic, huh?
Yeah. It's like it's not like a real hair weave. It's a synthetic. Anyway, I would imagine that you'd have to make this with like nanobots that just bond to your skeleton.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's like, hey, Shepard, can we like, you know, let's just sketch off like a week of your schedule next week because you got to go in to replace your humerus. And then like,
oh, my God. Yeah. We're going to cut you completely open to get at your bones and then sew you back up. Like there's a reason why this concept only worked for Wolverine in the comics is because of his healing factor. He like you could actually inject this inside his body and then he would heal fast enough to make it possible. Right. Mm. But like a regular human being, there's no way unless it was like at a molecular level, like a nanobot level, just built piece by piece by piece over a period of time. And your body can slowly adjust and adapt to it.
Maybe if they could like reprogram the chemical things in your endocrine system that like would release calcium into bone development, and then instead of calcium it's like fucking titanium. I don't even know how that would work.
Maybe. Well, what's so crazy about calcium is that it's actually really, really hard. Like,
yeah,
like titanium. Like if you've watched any of those like forging shows where they make swords and weapons and things, the only reason that steel is as hard as it is because of the combinations of other chemicals that are in it, like carbon. And the carbon and the calcium in your bones is what makes them so hard. Or like the antlers of a ram or something like that are actually really freaking hard. Like you take a steel sword and hit those antlers and they don't break very easily. The sword is more likely to break than the antlers.
It's kind of crazy. Yeah. How strong calcium is. So if they can find something that is worth being an upgrade to calcium. That's incredible that they have this technology. They being Cerberus, I think, would be the people who are, you know, implementing this. So there's a third one as well that applies to muscles, and it's called microfiber weave. Another weave.
I'm gonna have different weaves for different occasions.
So this one, I don't quite understand why it calls it a weave, because the description is perforating the muscles with microfibers increases overall strength and decreases the potential for muscle damage from exertion.
Maybe because those fibers weave together in like a netting.
Yeah, they're just like the muscle. I feel like someone discovered that if you put a very thin, strong fiber into a certain pattern, it becomes like stretchable but unbreakable, and then they're like, we should put this in Shepard.
This is perfect. This is perfect for our super soldier commander of the forces that are going to stop all the evil in the galaxy.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of healing, you had mentioned it earlier, Dr. Chakwas does tell Shepard that the cybernetics that Shepard has will heal better within Shepard's body if they keep an overall positive attitude, which it relates to being a paragon. And if you don't, then your body may start to reject implants, which is why if you're a renegade, you start to see those red, like demonic looking cyborg Terminator scars on your face.
Right. It's because you don't believe that the implants are adapting as well.
It all comes down to psychology.
Sure.
And Shepard can look pretty ugly if you go full renegade and then the scars and whatnot on your face. And James can comment on Shepard's implants if you are very renegade, basically assuring Shep not to worry about their appearance because people are used to cybernetics these days. That's an interesting thing to say, right? Because maybe James is just trying to be kind and say, don't worry about it, you look great.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's being straight up and honest, like, dude, you know, cybernetics are so common now, don't even worry about it. Like, no one cares.
It might be a little bit of both. Like, that both might be true, right?
Yeah.
Creepy looking Shepard, you know, laser beam eyes and whatever. I don't know that those are the ones that people are particularly used to seeing. More like, oh, that person has a metal arm.
Yes.
Like,
they must have been in an accident or
something. Not like scars on their face and laser eyes. So
regardless of how common cybernetics actually are, which we're going to try and dissect in the next few points, Shepard is still not typical. So keep that in mind, because they are the golden child with a corporation with a very deep pocket behind them who's not afraid of skirting any regulation or law in the name of human advancement. So
yeah, Cerberus. And their leader has crazy cyber eyes.
Yes, which predates any interaction that he had with the Reapers, and we'll get into that. But Shepard's not the only protagonist with cybernetic things in their body that they have to get used to. The Pathfinder has an AI chip in their brain, Sam. And this does cause the Pathfinder some, I guess you could call them side effects, things that the Pathfinder has to overcome as they get used to having Sam in their brain. So there is the implant there. And of course, if you want to learn more about Sam, you should play Andromeda, but basically Sam works in real time with Pathfinder, processing sensory input from Ryder's body.
Man, I don't know how I would deal with that, 'cause I've got too many voices in my head already. Anyway, speaking of cyberpunk, in cyberpunk, this is a weird segue. There's a thing called cyberpsychosis. And the concept is the more you replace of your body with synthetic parts, the less humanity remains. And this eventually affects the mind, the psyche, and people will actually break down after too many implants. And it's different for every individual. It's not like just a kind of a flat thing, but it is a thing. And is that a thing in Mass Effect at all?
Like I said, the Pathfinder definitely has some side effects, which is to be expected because no one has that kind of AI implant besides the Pathfinder and Pathfinder's dad beforehand.
Leave me and my son alone. Sorry.
And it's not like a Johnny Silverhand situation. Sam is not antagonistic like that. And it's not like it's going to kill the Pathfinder at all. Mm-hmm. But other characters do suffer from medical symptoms from some rejected implants, which we know. But psychosis seems to be exceedingly rare.
Okay.
And with a little caveat there, if it's not from Reaper tech.
Right. Yeah. So I guess that. Yeah. But it's still not the same. The Reaper tech is doing a thing. It's not just because you happen to have a certain amount of your body replaced. You all of a sudden the psychosis starts to really take over. It's with the Reapers. It's engineered that
right
way.
Yeah, it's being controlled,
like, right? Yeah. It's a different kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah. So and who is a better representation of the effect of implanting Reaper tech over time than Saren in Mass Effect 1? Saren tells us midway through Mass Effect 1 that he accepted an offer from Sovereign to become more powerful with implants from the Reapers. Now this is an important point in terms of art direction. Because if you're playing Mass Effect 1 with no mods, just as it's meant to be played, then you're going to meet Saren and he's already going to look like a cyborg.
Yeah.
But that's not how the art team imagined Saren looking at first.
Okay.
He was supposed to look like an old, feeble Sith Lord, purely organic, with some piercing yellow eyes. And there's this mod called the Saren Appearance Mod. I think I'm messing up the name, but he was supposed to look like this, wearing dark robes, and then he would gradually become more and more cyborg-like throughout the game.
Interesting.
Actually, now that I say that, I think it's called the Saren Stages Mod. Look it up if you're playing with mods. But it reflects visually the verbal cues that he says in the game when he says, "I've been upgraded," and he makes these comments. So it makes a lot more sense narratively, and it also shows us the effect of Saren becoming more and more indoctrinated and crazy and like losing touch with reality through the exposure of this Reaper tech within Saren's body.
Right. Okay. Are there any other good examples?
Yeah, the Elusive Man. You mentioned his eyes beforehand. Mm-hmm. His eyes are actually not from the Reapers, as far as we know. And I could be wrong about that, but I haven't found anything that links his eyes to being Reaper tech. I think they were just eye implants that enhance his eyes. And they are the first thing we notice. And Joker, Arya, and Jacob actually all comment on it, his appearance and, you know, looking like that. And Jacob says, "Is there anything human in them?" Meaning his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that's commenting on his morality, but it's also, you know, mentioning his appearance.
Well, the eyes are the windows to the soul. So
there we go.
Yeah.
That I do love that quote. But that can also be deceiving, by the way.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And in Mass Effect 3, we see surveillance footage of the Elusive Man being implanted with Reaper tech. He says, you know, risks be damned, let's do it. And then he really jumps off the deep end even more than he already did. I mean, he was already a terrorist before then, but then he jumps off the deep end because he gets fully indoctrinated and leads this last ditch effort to try and doom humanity, basically by stopping Shepard from ending it all. He says it's to try and control the Reapers, but like they even say he could never control us. We controlled him because of the Reaper tech within him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the puppet. Yeah.
So this is a long-winded way of saying cyberpsychosis is really just inspired in the Mass Effect universe. The only equivalent is indoctrination. So it's like you can just blame the Reapers for that. But there are medical symptoms and side effects that people do seem to have from implants.
In chat, they're talking about the L2 implants, which we've mentioned previously, and how those can cause problems. But psychosis is not quite the same thing as that.
No. I imagine that like sleepless nights and constant headaches would drive someone to the brink of being crazy.
Right. But it's a secondary thing. It's not a primary thing. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also Kai Ling, who has had a lot of cybernetic implants. He was, you know, basically the Elusive Man's key agent and then Golden Child after Shepard defected from Cerberus.
Yeah. Well, when he shows up in the games, he's doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Like, he's clearly moving and acting in a way that's beyond just regular capabilities of a person.
Yes, he's been highly, highly enhanced, as have other Cerberus soldiers. But it seems to be the difference here is that these other Cerberus troops that we meet in Mass Effect 3, especially in the Mars mission when you take off the helmet, they appear to be implanted with Reaper implants because they look Husk-like. Mm-hmm. So technology, yes, but corrupted technology, so a little different. Beyond Cerberus, there's also gray boxes. You know, we talked about that in terms of them being invented as an aid for people with Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And the gray boxes we see with Keiji and Kasumi Goto, they are technology that often require brain implants. So you could call them a cybernetic because they help people store and encrypt memories like that. If you're interested in learning more about that, I forget which episode that is. I think we might, that might have been diseases.
Yeah.
Is when we talked about that.
Yeah.
There's a very base level one, which I don't think people would think of when they think of cybernetics, but we see it everywhere in Mass Effect. And it occurred to me late when I was researching this, how many times do we see people use an Omni tool? And they're not wearing armor. So you can't say that it's just a computer from their armor.
Right. Yeah. And it, like, the thing shows up around their physical fleshy arm. Like, like it's right there. Yeah.
And like, yeah, they could have like, you know, the equivalent of a cell phone or a computer chip in their pocket, I guess. But yeah. I think it's probably more the likely considering that considering that the entire galaxy's economy works off of credits, and that is a digital currency, and that all of the extranet surfing going on, you can access it from your Omni tool. It's probably not that far of a stretch to say that people are getting implants for Omni tools that are not even soldiers, that are not even like, you know, in the military or law enforcement. Credit chits are mentioned in the game, and I recognize that, but when I hear credit chit, I think of like a credit card, and that seems so archaic for this universe. I know it's a thing. I know that it's a physical thing that people can drop.
Right. Right.
But again, how often are we seeing people pay for things and do other things with their Omni tools?
Right. Well, there might be some cases where you need something to be able to be physically handed over. And so it's kind of just a backup currency.
Yeah.
Or methodology of moving currency or something, you know.
Yeah, maybe it's more secure that way. I'm not sure. Maybe like more secure as in like how floppy disks are more secure than like, you know, just accessing the internet.
Or if I needed to give you something to give to somebody else, but I didn't want to transfer it through your accounts and I can't get in contact with that person directly or through, you know, the net or whatever, you would have to, you'd still have to give something. You'd have to hand something over physically to deliver it.
Yeah, so the distinction there between, you know, how often Omni tool use is because of people with cybernetic implants, it's not exactly clarified as far as I've seen, but I think it's a logical conclusion to make that a lot of people probably have implants within their skin that allows them to bring up the Omni tool at any time.
Yeah, yeah, that would make sense.
So, and if you count anyone with a biotic implant. I know that the chat was talking about Caden earlier and the L2 implants. Well, if you count anyone with a biotic implant as having cybernetics, which it is, then you get this picture that, wait a second, like cybernetics are way more common in Mass Effect than I thought they were.
Yeah. Yeah. It creates, I mean, that's a very significant, a small, but significant portion of the population.
Right. Omni tools, biotic implants, gray boxes, Cerberus and all their troops. All of the tech specialists in the Alliance, if you can think about it. And that's just about humanity. And as well as Shepard himself and the Pathfinder. So it's interesting how well the writers were able to weave in all of these cybernetic references so seamlessly into a lore that felt truly unique to its own franchise.
Yeah.
That was interesting to me.
Right. Without stepping on other things too strongly.
Right. Yeah. Because if it is part of everyday life, then you're not going to make a big hoopla about it. Right.
Right. Yeah. Like we don't all talk about our cell phone. I mean, we talk about cell phones, but we don't it like somebody pulls out a cell phone. Nobody goes, oh, you got a cell phone.
Like, right.
It's not a thing. You just,
oh, what's that you got there? A fancy cell phone?
Now you might go, oh, you got the new model. Right. But you're not going to be like, what? A cell phone at the dinner table? Like,
yeah, it wasn't so on the nose like we see in other games, and I get that's part of Cyberpunk's shtick, so I'm not like criticizing them for it. And besides, a lot of Cyberpunk is supposed to be on the nose. Like, that's the style.
Yeah, no, it's like that, but that's part of the flavor of that, is that those technologies have affected the world in a very severe kind of way, which we obviously, there are effects of this in Mass Effect, but it's not the same level. It has changed the way that people do things and the capabilities of people, but it hasn't affected culture to the same degree that culture has shifted in Cyberpunk.
Yeah,
it's a different
kind
of thing.
So yeah, Mass Effect isn't so dystopian,
right,
as Cyberpunk is. And people seem to have maintained their humanity despite having cybernetic upgrades.
Right. Or realizing that they're living in a galaxy full of other races that could destroy them at any moment and all of that. So
there's that too, you know. Yeah. But, you know, it does seem that it's just a part of everyone's daily lives.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, it's time to take a break and thank our patrons, and we'll be back to talk about more cybernetics. So don't go anywhere.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this station is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. This is where we get to thank our patrons, including our newest patron, Mr. Bob. That's such a... I love it. I love when patrons
it's
have...
Mr. Bob to
it's
you.
Mr. It's all one word, too. Mr. Bob. Just Mer-Bob. Or maybe it's pronounced Mer-Bob, maybe. Let me know, Mr. Bob. Also, we're going to shout out our Shepherd tier patrons, which include Kokushins, Ed Boy, Aaron J, Kira C, Lieutenant Cicino, That Spectre J, and William. Thank you for your support as well. And all 71 of our current patrons, thank you for supporting this show and keeping this going. We really do appreciate it. If you are interested in joining these patrons and all the different kinds of stuff you can get, then go to patreon.com/MassEffectLoreCast. Check out all the different stuff, ad-free episodes, episodes a day early, t-shirts, stickers, all sorts of awesome things. And also joining us on the Patreon episode at the end of every month, which is coming up in 2 weeks. It'll be on the actual last day of the month, on the 31st, Friday the 31st at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So if you still got time, sign up and join us if you'd like to come chat and be on the show. We also have a new review from CryptKeeper, exclamation, CryptKeeper, exclamation. This is from the United States. CryptKeeper says, I am not sovereign, but this station is mine. I just recently discovered Mass Effect when I was able to download the Legendary Edition for free on PS4. By the way, that is an awesome deal. If you are a new member of our community and you've been playing on PS4 because you got it for free, or PS5, then chime in. Let us know. Let us know what you think of the series. After playing through Mass Effect 1 a couple times because I realized I was missing content and opportunities, I finally completed the trilogy. I became engrossed in the storylines and characters. This pushed me to look for a podcast that would discuss the lore. I am literally listening to Episode 7, Asari Lore, as I write this. I have some catching up to do. I also joined the Discord. Robot robots and N7 are really doing a great job filling in the blanks and filling out the backstories with the characters I have grown really attached to. I am glad I found them. As a side note, I give them credit for having the guts to forge through the never-ending political and gender questions and discussions that the game story requires. In today's crazy landmine-filled environment regarding these topics, it takes a really N7's courage to and skill to make it work. Well done. Thumbs up. I should go. Scriptkeeper, that's awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to leave that review. If you would like to get your words on the show in the future, then leave a rating, a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll read it out. Ratings on Spotify and other platforms are also extremely helpful in making sure people know that this is a show worth checking out. So thank you to everybody who supports us and for all of your support. Anything else we want to share? I think that's it for this week.
Well, There is one piece that's interesting that I realized just now. I had thought about it before, but I just realized it again, which is that today, technically, I think yesterday on St. Paddy's Day, was the anniversary of when we started the show.
Was it St. Paddy's Day? Wow.
Yeah, March.
I guess
March,
I forget that every year.
March 17th, I believe, 2021. Wow. So 2 years behind us, we're entering year three now.
That's crazy. How did that happen? What is going on? I need to update the logo.
We need to update the logo. Yeah.
If you have some ideas for what we should do with the logo, let me know. Because is there art specific to Mass Effect 3 that we could pull from?
Yes. We'll look into it. We could do something with the horizon of Earth specifically, and the Reapers coming down.
Oh, a big Reaper. We have a big Reaper in the background. All right. Well, we'll look for that. I'll be working on that. All right. Let's move on with the rest of the show.
Spit it out. Or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
And big thanks to everybody who listens and everybody who has supported the show for the last 2 years to get us to 2 years, because that is huge. And we absolutely couldn't do it without all of you. So thank you. Thank you to everyone. So, all right, we're back. And now that we've discussed a bit about cybernetics, we learned a little bit more about that. I still have some questions that aren't answered, like what are the companies making these implants? And is there competition in that space? Are they all human companies? Are they alien company? Like, what is going on with, think about how popular and expensive, or how much money cell phone companies make, and these things do a fraction of what you could do with a bunch of nanobots in your body or synthetic arms and stuff.
Well, we do know that there are a number of companies that work in the biotech realm, like Binary Helix, that we hear a lot about. Binary Helix, Saren actually being an investor of that company, a big investor. We hear a lot about that, but Binary Helix is nowhere close to being like Arasaka. You know, it's not.
So for anybody who doesn't know Cyberpunk, Arasaka and Militech are like the two big cybernetic companies. They do a lot of different things, weapons and stuff like that. But if you're going to get your arm replaced, you're probably going to get an Arasaka or a Militech installed.
So it's not like that. It's a lot more like if Logitech had arm replacements.
Okay.
You know, a lot less insidious, I think. Maybe some white collar crime going on there. But
I got the new Razor Pinky.
I got a flip arm. I don't even know how that would work.
I don't know. Okay.
It's a collapsible arm. Anyway, the short answer is, you know, there's just not enough lore that I've seen that could give us definitive answers to those. We don't know a lot more about cybernetics. You know, there's not even a codex entry specifically on cybernetics, but there is one on the other topic that we're going to talk about today, which is genetic engineering and gene therapy.
Yeah, I think we've brought this up before. Okay, I'm excited to dive into this. What do we know concrete about genetic engineering?
So the Codex does have its own entry, which is actually pretty long for a Codex entry about genetic engineering. And I was kind of surprised about it, considering how little of a percentage it constitutes of all of the dialogue in Mass Effect. Mm. So the Codex says, in the 22nd century, manipulation of the human genome became commonplace. Techniques of genetic engineering advanced to the point where the rich could build custom-built fetuses that grew into stronger, smarter, and more attractive adults. In more permissive regions, custom-designed life forms and uplifted animals occupied an ill-defined niche between property and sapient being.
Like, you could have a dog that talks to you. Like, basically, you're creating a house elf that's like a chihuahua that walks on its hind legs and helps you do the dishes.
This, I had trouble finding specific instances of this, but it's fun to imagine, you know, right? Like, this is my chinchilla. His name is Gregory. Please be polite.
Gregory, say hello to our guests. Hello, guests. I'm Gregory. That's how a chinchilla would talk.
May I fetch you an ice cold beverage?
May I fetch you an ice cube, but one at a time, because that's all I can carry. Because I'm a chinchilla.
Won't you gentlemen stay for a Pepsi?
I've been practicing my Shakespearean acting, which you care for version. Oh, God. This is going. Okay, we're not going to continue.
Perhaps I can bring you some refreshments or perhaps a nice remoulade.
I was thinking like chinchilla does like, I don't know, Romeo and Juliet, but plays all the parts for you and has been like. Is the entertainment for the night? Anyway, okay.
He's the jester, yeah. Basically, rich people, for whatever reason that they want, can, circumvent the law and use genetic engineering to uplift animals. To what degree? I don't know. And for what purpose would be up to them. But they can do that, or they do that. They're not allowed to do that, but they do that. And for much of the council-ruled galaxy, it seems that it's just the rich couples building custom fetuses. It's like, I was going to make a Pimp My Car reference, but, you know, Pimp My Baby doesn't sound as good.
Right. Right. I hope we get in the next Mass Effect, like, one really out there location on the fringes somewhere where, like, wealthy people live, and they've got, like, talking giraffes that like take care of their yards for them but also welcome you when you get to the property, and they're wearing like pants.
Maybe that's what happened with the space cow.
Maybe
that's why it steals your money. Someone was like, what if I have a space cow and I give him a personality akin to Oliver Twist?
Okay,
the Artful Dodger as a space cow. As far as we see played out in the games, in Mass Effect 1, we see this argument about custom built fetuses and the ethics around that, between a couple on the Citadel Presidium, and for some reason Shepard can weigh in.
Of course,
like it's their business. Anyway, here's a clip from that.
I'm telling you, this is not what Jake would want.
Who are you to tell me what my husband would want?
I'm the only person making sense right now. You're endangering your baby.
I don't care what you think, Michael. It's my decision.
I know you're hurting, Rebecca, but don't let your grief hurt your baby too.
Can I help you with anything?
Perhaps you can talk some sense into her.
I don't need anyone to talk sense into me, Michael. I'm not undergoing the treatments.
My sister-in-law here is pregnant, and she's refused to let the baby undergo gene therapy in utero.
I'm certain that she has a good reason. I'd like to hear both sides.
My husband Jacob died from a rare heart condition several months ago.
There's a chance that the baby could develop the same heart condition, but routine gene therapy can eliminate it.
A very small chance, Michael. And extranet reports say the therapy could harm the child.
It's less dangerous than the genetic enhancements that every soldier in the Alliance receives.
It's Rebecca's child, Michael. I think you should honor her decision.
Damn it.
Damn it. It goes on from there, but man, that guy's like pissed.
Yeah, Michael, come on, man.
Come on, man. What is he doing? Come on, man. Give me a little break here.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. We don't actually explore the validity of what Michael is saying, that it is safe, that the gene therapy is safe. We don't actually ever explore the data behind that. So he could be right. He could just be being an asshole, which he is being.
Yeah, he may just be, or he may just think it's safe or just trying to convince her for other reasons. Who knows?
Right. Yeah. And so Shep can influence this decision. I don't know why. It's not exactly Shepard's business at all. But it's an RPG game, and this is a classic RPG, NPC conversation.
It gives us insight into the culture and the nature of the technology and that kind of thing. So it makes sense for being something that would be worth your attention as the player.
As a player, yes, right. Not as Shepard.
Not as Shepard, but
as the player.
Everything is catered to the player, so it makes sense from that perspective.
Exactly, and I still like it. Like, I like the fact that there are quests like this, but the Paragon choice for Shep is to reply and say, look, dude, it's her choice, let her decide.
Right, her body, her choice, dude. Chill the F out. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're not even the dad of this kid. Like,
right.
And Renegade choice is guilting her into doing gene therapy to potentially save the baby's life, which is like horrendous the way that it comes across, the way that Shepard's saying this to the woman. So there are immense ethical concerns over this, even in the Mass Effect universe, that you can edit out undesirable potential disease traits from genetics.
Yeah. And we're actually very close to that in our own society.
Yeah.
Like within a generation, this might be a real thing.
With CRISPR technology, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're rocketing toward that, no pun intended. But, in Mass Effect, there seems to still be the classic ethical conundrum prevalent in so many sci-fi series of whether or not it's the right thing to do. And we can hear that play out there. Ashley also tells us that her mother had in utero therapy to correct for nearsightedness. So while Rebecca's child, he's trying to convince her to edit out a potential heart condition. Mm-hmm. It can also be used for much less serious concerns, like being nearsighted.
Right. The major issue with these things is that genes are not that simple. The gene edit that may fix nearsightedness may also have effects to other things that don't seem to have anything related from our rational view of like, oh, well, it affects your eyes. So, but no, all of a sudden you also now have some other thing that you couldn't have even assumed would be a thing, because genes are complex. The way they're expressed is complex. There's a lot going on there. So that's part of the issue, is that there's risk involved and there's a lot of research. I mean, genes are complex. You would have to, the whole folding at home thing, the idea that you can actually the amount of data that process uses in order to just figure out how genes fold and how they actually interact is immense. So there's a lot there.
Here I was thinking that you were talking about folding like a pair of Levi's.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, it has to do with like the way that, that we won't get into all the details, but it's fixing something like nearsightedness isn't as simple as like, you can't just cut and it's not like editing a podcast where like, oh, I slipped up and I burped real loud into my microphone. Now we're done with the live show. I can just go cut that little piece out. Nobody will ever know it's there. And it doesn't affect anything else on the entire show. It's not that simple.
You can't change one side of the equation without altering something else.
Yeah.
These genes go on. No, oh boy. That's not the song.
Oh, man.
So nearsightedness, certainly less of a serious condition, but it gives a good idea of just how trivial of a medical condition people are using gene therapy for in utero in this universe. I feel like a lot of people might not actually take ethical problems with fixing nearsightedness, right? Sure. If they think that nothing else is going to change,
right?
Because it doesn't seem insidious at all. But the second that you start talking about, well, what if we could just make our baby smarter? What if we could make our baby more,
Or people live longer or more attractive or more
susceptible to cancer.
Sure.
Then it becomes more contentious.
Yeah. Also, the more traditional sides of the community are going to take issue even with simple changes, because they're going to argue things like you were designed by God or the creator, whatever their religion is, and that's how God wanted you. He didn't want you to be changed. Mm. But people would counter that with, well, what's the difference of treating a disease after birth as opposed to before birth? Why suffer the thing if you're still going to treat it afterwards anyway? What's ultimately the difference, right? So there are multiple sides, and both sides can argue those things. So that's part of why there are communities today of people who are very religious who don't go get medical treatment, modern medical treatment for things, is because they believe that's, you know, prayer is enough and all of that.
And what's interesting to me specifically is who the character is that tells us about this. It's Ashley, the person who is comparatively conservative to all of our other squad mates, who does believe in God, and her family did raise her that way. And she's the one who in utero was the beneficiary of nearsightedness being eliminated from gene therapy,
which is good, because it shows that people are complex. It shows that situations are complex, and it shows that not everybody who fits into category A only fits into category A, that there's, you know, it's not that cut and dry. So,
right. She's not extreme with her views about God, apparently, or at least her family wasn't.
Right. And most people aren't. Most believers aren't on the extreme ends of the spectrum. They're in the bell curve part, in the middle.
Right.
Yeah.
Who are historically quieter.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So again, that's just one paragraph from the Codex that tells us about that. And then those are some examples that we see in the game of that paragraph. And then the next paragraph in the Codex entry says, travel to planets with unique forms of life brought an awareness of that Earth's unique biodiversity could be lost if spliced and hybridized to gain useful alien qualities. The Sodhem-Wolcott Genetic Heritage Act was passed by the Systems Alliance Parliament in 2161. Okay, first of all, I love the proper noun there and the actual naming of this act.
Yeah.
Because even though they haven't written any lore behind, like they didn't write 80 pages of legal language of what this act does.
Right.
Right. But even the fact that they named it and put a date to it, it's world building. It feels real.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is what would happen in our own world. These kinds of things, acts get passed, and there's a date and a name based on the people who pushed the thing through the legislature or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what we do know is that it imposes sharp restrictions on controversial uses of genetic engineering, but it provided government subsidies for beneficial applications.
It's one of those. Yeah. Like, hey, you can't do this, but you can't do this. And yeah.
What qualifies as beneficial? What qualifies as controversial? A lot of
Now we're getting into modern politics. I said we weren't going to get into any modern politics.
It's hard not to.
It's hard.
Mean, this is
happening in I won't go into the details. If you want to get into, look at your local legislatures and look at the national legislatures and look at the actual language put in bills, and then try to find language that is intentionally vague, and I guarantee you will find it.
Yes,
similar to what is listed here.
And that's actually by design for our republic, because the founders envisioned a judiciary where if laws were passed that were challenged, they would be decided by the judiciary.
Right.
So this is by design
that
things were kept a little vague.
But sometimes it's too vague in a way that just, and nobody's willing to act because they don't want to get sued or thrown in jail. And,
exactly.
And it means the scope of the law is bigger than it actually is, which is kind of similar to this, right? You know, like controversial uses. Well, what is that? Like I know it when I see it, right? Like that whole thing. It's like, if you and I don't agree about that?
Yeah. The other reason why I think a lot of laws like this, even in the Mass Effect universe, might have been phrased so vague is because it prevents, as it opens it up to, it also prevents loopholes. Because if they mm-hmm. specifically banned 26 uses, 26 separate uses of genetic engineering, I guarantee you there's going to be someone who uses it in a non-beneficial, controversial way, and it just so happens to not be part of those 26 guidelines.
Right.
And so they have skirted by the law, and they can't be prosecuted for it.
Right. It's also easier to write it if it's vague. To get into the details takes a lot more work as a writer. So there's that.
Yes. So it's vague, and interesting to note, 2161, right after the First Contact War. interesting timing, I think.
That makes sense. I mean, the humans are actually really struggling with aliens and alien technology and the concept of splicing DNA from different species. Sure.
Yeah. And so I think it also goes hand in hand with following the First Contact War. Human beings are spreading out to many different planets, and they might be finding that a lot of planets don't have nearly the same biodiversity as Earth. So it brings about this revival of environmental conservationism. That's like, hold on, we really shouldn't change what we have too much, because if we do, it could be lost forever.
Right.
And we're not going to find probably many other planets like ours. So vague, arbitrary guidelines, ultimately up to what whatever the ruling party or judiciary seems to be acceptable. And I laughed when I read beneficial applications, because it reminded me of when we talked about Metagel and how Metagel was technically violating the invention of Metagel, technically violated Citadel Conventions and Systems Alliance law, but it was too beneficial, so they looked past it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So like
another one of those things that happens in the real world. So
yeah, the ends justified the means.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sure that's not going to inspire any corruption at all. there's some in-game examples specifically with Metagel about where we kind of see that kind of thing played out. And then the next part is pretty interesting as well. In the Codex, it gets into screening and therapy. It says most governments provide free assessments and corrective therapy for genetic diseases in prospective parents, like what we talked about earlier with Rebecca and Michael. This has nearly eliminated everything from cystic fibrosis to nearsightedness. The earlier screening and therapy is performed, the more comprehensive the results, though ideally performed on artificially fertilized zygotes in a lab. Procedures are available for embryos in the womb and newborns out of respect for personal beliefs.
Yep, it makes sense. It makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it does, the way that it phrases this, most governments provide free assessments and corrective therapy for genetic diseases. That would seem to almost implicate that universal healthcare is a thing.
Yeah,
in Mass Effect.
It does that. It also supports the idea that a healthy population is going to be better for society as a whole, because there's going to be less need for medical stuff later on. There's going to be less, more people are going to be able to work harder for longer, which is going to benefit the economy, the military, all sorts of different things. So in a I would put forth the concept that in a future scenario where this is possible and safe, that it benefits any society for the government to mandate this as a free thing that it would give out. There'd be more benefits than drawbacks overall.
I feel like there were a couple trends and events in the Mass Effect universe that probably inspired, if there is universal healthcare among citizens of the Systems Alliance. I feel like there were a couple of trends and events that probably spurred that decision. One of them being that this is in the future, far in the future, and population decline was probably happening at the same time that the First Contact War happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a population decline. You have this new and unknown threat, an existential threat to all of humanity.
Yeah.
And maybe there was such inequality in the different nations on Earth that they thought, we need to keep people healthy because they could potentially be drafted.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be part of it. That could be part of it. There's like less, even less different diversity of governments in the future too. We talked about that. So having one overarching major government system looking for everybody, I feel like you're going to have some sense of balance there between what like the masses of people want and what's for them, and who's in control can argue.
Well, that could be the pressure from the Systems Alliance, since they control the, you know, humanity's military. But as we talked about with different governments, there's still nation states on Earth.
Yeah.
And it's just that a lot of them have conglomerated into larger groups like the United North American states,
right.
So Mexico, Canada, United States.
I feel like that's one of those extreme things where, in that scenario, governments would move into one of the extremes: more socialized or more authoritarian.
Mm-hmm.
Like one or the other, and this scenario, they happen to go more socialized.
Yeah, yeah, and I I can see that completely happening. That probably didn't come, or probably didn't come out of nowhere, but happened after some tumult. We know that there was a second American Civil War, but that'll be another conversation for a different day. Dr. Chakwas, you know, tells us that Joker actually needs care for the rest of his life, meaning that he could not have benefited, I guess, from these free assessments and corrective therapy. Maybe it came about too late after he was born.
Maybe. Or maybe his family opted out of it.
Or maybe his family opted out of it. Or maybe they couldn't afford it. I'm not sure.
Or maybe there are certain diseases that just can't be corrected yet. Or the procedure isn't safe enough, so they don't operate on those specific genes specifically.
Right.
So,
as we know, Vrolich syndrome, after having talked with Dr. Gregg, it's very complex. It is a set of diseases. And it is quite possible that maybe the genetic therapy just wasn't to the point that it could help yet. And maybe it would simply require too much replacement of Joker's biological being via cybernetics to actually make his life worth living.
Right. Or would have caused other issues genetically by adjusting those genes in one direction. Things would have gone too far in another. So,
right. Yeah. There may have been, you know, it could have been because of will, could have been because of a lack of capability of it helping. But Dr. Chakwas does confirm to us that the Joker will need care for the rest of his life. That care not, you know, she did not say that that care would be genetic engineering. Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked a lot about helping people with diseases, conditioning out genetic diseases and things like that. But it also can be used to enhance the natural abilities of human beings. And the Codex says improvement of natural human abilities is legal, but adding new abilities is not. Treatments to improve strength, reflexes, mental ability, or appearance are permitted by the law. Adding a tail or the ability to digest cellulose is not. So some genetic enhancement provided for free to Alliance military recruits, but the average citizen must pay for the privilege. So there we have another, we have kind of an answer, a caveat answer to our previous question about universal healthcare. Maybe it only stipulates if you have a genetic condition that you need taken out, but we're not going to pay for you to just enhance something.
Right, right. It also maintains that human beings at least still look and act mostly like human beings.
Yeah, they're not running around with tails.
Right, or they have green skin and now all of a sudden they can process energy from the sun. You know,
like, I want to be an Argonian. Yeah, you can't do that. Or at least maybe you could, but you could not. You definitely could not get the government to pay for your health care, I guess, to do that. And it would be illegal. But this is, you know, this is an entry from Mass Effect 1, and this is what's so impressive that they build upon it, because later we basically meet the person who's a walking embodiment of this enhancement stipulation without, you know, adding superpowers or extra human abilities. And this is, you know, what happens when human genetics are taken to the very maximum level with no limitations on expense. Here's that person.
You. Well, you should probably know that I've had extensive genetic modification. Not my decision, but I make the most of it. It's one of the reasons the elusive man handpicked me. I'm very good at just about anything I choose to do.
What level of genetic modification are we talking about?
That's very thorough. Physically, I'm superior in many ways. I heal quickly and I'll likely live half again as long as the average human. My biotic abilities are also very advanced. For a human. Add to that some of the best training and education money can buy, and, well, it's pretty impressive, really.
Sounds like you were designed to be perfect.
Maybe, but I'm not. I'm still human, Shepard. I make mistakes like everyone else. And when I do, the consequences are severe. Everyone expects a lot from someone with my abilities.
You certainly don't lack for confidence.
It's just a fact. My reflexes, my strength, even my looks, they're all designed to give me an edge. No point in hiding from it. It's the reason that...
No point in hiding from it.
This is why, this conversation is why a lot of players who first meet Miranda are very put off by her. The humble brag.
Yeah, and we talked about humble brags in the series last time, I think. And it, like, how do you... Can you imagine being in her situation trying to explain all of these enhancements and how she was engineered in order to be perfect without it sounding like a humble brag?
And especially to less privileged people, since like, apparently her father's incredibly rich.
Right. How do you even have that conversation without it being awkward? I can't imagine how you frame that. And I'm sure she's struggled with that over and over and over again, but it always comes across like a humble brag. And when she's just simply, and maybe she is doing that, but maybe she's just trying to convey the information, and there's just no easy way to do it because socially it's awkward.
And that's a large part of her character arc, you know. We'll be talking about her later, but she brings up an interesting point. What would society expect from someone who they know has been modified to be perfect?
Yeah, yeah.
Expectations would be very high.
It's the gifted scenario. If anybody studied gifted children, I've gone through this personally myself. I've seen a generation of my peers go through the gifted program as children, and because you tested better than other kids did at a certain age. And your brains, no gifted child has the same brain as any other gifted child. They just have certain things that they do better, or they scored higher on IQ test or something, right? And because of the privilege of that, because of the way society puts these perspectives on gifted children, they're expected to outperform everybody, to learn faster, to make something of their lives. And many of them are just end up living normal lives and feeling like they're failures because everybody else caught up. It's just the way it goes, right? Like maybe you start with more, but other people catch up. It's a scenario we see in our own world. So,
and I've seen a lot of people who went through gifted and talented education, who I grew up with, and I'm sorry to say that like the pressure got to them.
Yeah,
like the pressure really got to them. A number of them resorted to drugs, became very addicted.
Yep.
And that hampered further, you know, success in education.
When everyone tells you that you're capable of doing anything and you can't, you realize that you can't because you're a human being and you're limited. It's very defeating. And I personally went through that. Like I went through a significant portion of my adult life where I felt like I was just not able to really accomplish much of anything, even though I had a background where everybody told me that, oh, you could do anything you want. And I was like, well, then why am I not succeeding at life? What's going on?
Yeah, why am I not achieving X, Y, Z?
Right. It's a weird thing.
On the flip side, when I was growing up, I had a speech impediment that doctors traced to an inner ear infection when I was around a certain age and being a toddler. Mm-hmm. And it made me mispronounce a lot of words. I also grew up when I was very young on the East Coast, and I had a thick New Jersey accent.
Uh-huh.
Right. My family moved to Ohio in the Midwest. And when I started elementary school there, the staff and the teachers had made the executive decision that I must be mentally handicapped.
You have a learning condition, right?
And when that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. They put me not only in remedial speech therapy, which granted it did help, but they also put me in remedial English.
Yeah.
Even though my reading comprehension was not affected by it at all. Even though other comprehension and verbal and nonverbal, what do they call them? Test scores, verbal and nonverbal,
acuity
or something
about.
Like that.
Right, right.
That wasn't affected. And then within 2-3 years, I was in the honors English program.
Right, right.
And it's not like someone waved a magic wand in those 2 years and made me more intelligent. I was just a kid and I was growing.
Right. Everybody grows. Everybody changes. You take an IQ test at 12 and you take one at 20 and you take one at 40 and they're all going to have different scores.
Yeah. And that was enough. You know, those 2-3 years, speech therapy extended far beyond that for about 5 or 6 years. But that was enough to severely damage my ego as a kid because I thought I'm behind. I'm dumber than other kids.
Right.
You know,
right. The social pressure and the social understanding of who you are in the system compared to everybody else has humongous effects on your development.
Yeah. And I guess it's ironic, you know, that I went through remedial speech therapy. I was put in those classes for a while and it actually did condition out any regional accent that I have. There's still some words, some things that I say that you can tell where I've lived given when I say them, but they're very few.
Yeah.
And It's ironic now that I make my living through my voice.
Right, right. Well, hey, maybe it worked out for the better.
Yeah, I think it did. But that happened after birth. It is not like gene therapy in Mass Effect. And I do wonder in gene therapy if they could predict whether or not someone would have a speech impediment, if they could condition that out. Maybe. And make them more perfect.
Maybe that sometimes way. That is a physical limitation. So I would imagine that the gene could change the way your tongue works in your mouth or, you know, things like that.
And about Miranda, you know, it's one thing to discuss it from the societal perspective with, you know, what would expectations for her be like? But what would her mental growth be like if she didn't encounter the same obstacles that everyone else does because of their shortcomings?
Right.
She didn't learn. Right. The things that I learned from having, you know, having had this speech impediment, having had to work around those other limitations that I had.
Right. I went through a thing just to share a little bit more. Things came very easily for me as a child that when I did come across things that were difficult, like learning a foreign language, there are specific things that I find very difficult. Those were huge obstacles. Just learning the fact that I needed to try hard and work hard in order to achieve something was something it took me well into my 30s to fully grasp and actually train myself to do, because growing up things were so easy that later on in life, things became more difficult because nothing is easy once you actually are in the real world and you don't have teachers and parents doting over you about like, oh, you're going to be great. You're going to do wonderful. Just
you
show
got
up.
Banded.
Right.
Got rubber banded in real life.
yeah. But it happens. And I'm not saying this to like, this is definitely not a humble brag in any way. It's not the opposite of humble. I'm just sharing information on it. And I think other people have probably been in the scenario before. Like, find anybody in your lives who was raised through like the gifted scenario. And 90% of them are going to have the same story.
Nothing in the modification, the gene modification in Mass Effect would seem to eliminate the chance that people would struggle with mental issues either.
Yeah. Yeah. I would imagine that that's still a big thing.
And yeah. And we hear it firsthand from Miranda. I mean, she has deep seated emotional and mental issues from this. We also learn more about this, enhancement protocol or this enhancement series of laws that govern it from, a conversation with a man named Rafael Vargas in Mass Effect 1. He is a representative for the company Binary Helix, which works on biotech. And it's because we as the player are asked to spy for a rival corporation, the Armali Council, posing as a potential buyer and a contract negotiator for either the Alliance or the Council as being a Spectre. And here's a clip from that.
Can I help you?
Mr. Vargas, I'm Commander Shepard, a Spectre. I understand you work for Binary Helix.
That's correct. Rafael Vargas, sales. Were you interested in our services?
I might be. That depends on what sort of offer your company can make.
It was my understanding that the Citadel contracted to a Solarian corporation for its enhancement programs.
Mr. Vargas, I'm here to talk business with you. If you'd rather speculate on politics, I can visit another GenEng firm.
You have my full attention, Shepard. I'm merely getting a handle on my negotiating position. First, the boilerplate disclaimer. No genetic enhancement is guaranteed to take. We can maximize the odds, but every strand of DNA is unique. Our patented techniques can provide an 8% improvement in adrenal response, 12% faster clotting, and a measurable decrease in CG muscle degeneracy.
Mars Genes Clotting Enhancement improves speed by 16%.
Ah, I see you've done some research. That's their official claim. However, we believe they cherry-picked their sample to show optimum results. The numbers we provide are strict mathematical averages. I can get you those improvements for 30,000 credits per head. For a bulk order, I can work in a sensory enhancement package, guaranteed 20/15 vision and hearing from 12 to 22,000 hertz.
That's the commercial price for individual purchasers. I'm offering you millions of jobs, Mr. Vargas. That's worth more than some stock sensory upgrades.
I'll give you a cautious probably. There is a standard discount for bulk orders, but I can't authorize that. I can push it upstairs. I'm sure someone will get back to you on it. I have to admit, it surprised me that you are here for business. There are many development projects on Novaria, some not entirely legal.
If they don't get in my face, I'm not going to dig them out. I'm not here for a random spot check.
My apologies. I shouldn't have belabored the point.
I love the sales talk in that, because it's very real, having worked in and around the sales world. It's very real.
It feels very corporate. It's a corporate chess match.
Well, this is what I can do, and really, this is it. Yeah, if that data is right about that, but here's what I can tell you about what we can do for you. Like, yes, absolutely.
I love that, and I love the casual mention that they can basically decrease muscle degeneracy from being in zero gravity.
Yeah.
And that they can improve clotting for people with this gene therapy. Shepard mentions a company named Mars Gene, which we don't actually hear anything else about, as being a contractor for the Alliance, which provides enhancement for every soldier who enlists, a standard package. I found that to be pretty interesting. So we get a little lore bit from Shepard as kind of like a, this isn't the focal point of the conversation, but let me just sprinkle some lore on this conversation
for
you.
Right. Or also, hey, I know what I'm talking about. I'm in the know with this stuff because of the kind of conversation that's taking place. Yeah.
Exactly. So we get a more full idea of what kind of things are being enhanced for human beings with this gene therapy in the Mass Effect universe. But there's also genetic engineering, and that's the next and final section of the Codex entry on here. This one's bizarre, and I wonder why they felt the need to include this in any legal code or anything like that. Artificial hybridization of genes from compatible non-human species with human genetic code is illegal. Creation of designed life is broadly legal and mainly used for terraforming and medical applications. But sentient creatures are heavily regulated, and creation of sapient life is outlawed by both the Systems Alliance and the Citadel Council. So different levels of government felt the need to tell people, no chimeras, please.
Yeah. The island of Dr. Moreau will not take place.
Please, God, no chimeras. understandable. They probably did not want people making artificial hybrids of, let's say, a human and an Elcor.
Oh, that God. Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah, it's one thing to, like, oh, we're going to create a griffin and, you know, we're going to give this lion wings, right? Like, that's one thing. It's another thing to have, like, humans, other stuff hybrid, which there are actual laws in most countries about already. Like,
wow.
No, there's, like, legitimately, you cannot, like, do certain procedures that would create a human other species hybrid. Like, they have existed before. Like ape human hybrids have
what
they've been. Yeah, it's a thing. You can look it up.
I don't want to.
I don't think they live very long. I'm just pulling from old memories, but this wasn't prepared for this. But yeah, it's like, yeah, if you were a scientist working on that today, you would be absolutely shut down by the government.
What's going on with you? What are you talking about? You sound insane.
that's like, I think 20% of the people listening to this in their cars right now.
Yeah, everyone's going to start Googling or checking Wikipedia for this.
I'm certainly going to Google it. I may not.
Pretty sure
tonight.
It's a real thing. Human ape hybrid. A human monkey hybrid created in China, 2019. Yeah, there's stuff out there. Mm-hmm.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Cue the bite of Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good note to end on.
that's a good note.
I think the takeaways that we can get from genetic therapy in Mass Effect is that they seem to be advancing, but it's not all powerful in preventing yet. And maybe partially due to economic requirements, maybe part of it's due to the fact that advancement was hampered by, you know, a massive galactic wide invasion of the Reapers. And even cybernetics cannot solve things for many people. Like, it cannot cure Thane's Kepril syndrome. And these things cannot fix Joker's broken bones.
Yeah. Well, this opens up a whole lot of possibilities for weird stuff in the next Mass Effect game and some of like the side quests and things. So
yeah, it does.
If any potential writers or current writers are listening to this show, you get some ideas from this. I hope you flesh them out, because it could get real weird.
Oh, I'd love to see. I would love to see weird, and here's a full circle thing since we started the episode talking about Elder Scrolls and Pelennor Whitestrake. If Michael Kirkbride decides to work on the next Mass Effect, I would love to see those ideas.
BioWare needs to hire Michael Kirkbride. If anybody doesn't know, look up Michael Kirkbride and look up the lore he's written for the Elder Scrolls. It's always the weirdest stuff. So
look up Coda. Eat like half a pop brownie. And then look up Coda.
You mentioned that you listened to that episode recently, I think, on the Discord, and you were like, what the hell? Yeah.
Yeah, I felt more baffled by that than any amount of Ancient Aliens I've ever watched.
It's amazing.
It was just bizarre. It was like, well, that's a plug for the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Go look at their wacky and wild lore.
We did a summer.
Coda.
Yeah, one of the years we did a whole summer of weird and wacky episodes with just like the weirdest bits of lore. And there's a lot out there. But anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. It's been kind of an extra long episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it and all the rabbit trails and things that we went on. And Sam, you got other stuff going on?
I do, yeah. So I just finished Mass Effect 2, the suicide mission with Neutral Shepard.
Uh-huh. I saw your death count on one of your like Twitter posts. Yeah,
it ended terribly. So first of all, we never woke up Grunt and Legion because that would require too much effort. And you could not do so neutrally.
We're going into this like terrible situation. Yeah, just don't wake up Grunt.
What? No, he's still in the fridge on the ship and Legion is still in hard boot mode.
Oh my God.
So they were asleep. They didn't even partake, which might have been a good thing because they can't die if they're not there. But even before we like started the actual mission part, when we're trying to get through to the collector ship, Thane, Kasumi, and Jack all die.
It's done. It's gone.
Because no ship upgrades were done.
Yeah.
And then we get there. Jacob dies after having survived the vents barely. He gets shot while trying to close the door because he wasn't loyal. And then I choose Miranda to hold the biotic bubble. She fails because she wasn't loyal. And Samara gets swarmed and taken off by collector bees.
Oh, no.
And Tally dies because she wasn't loyal and I had her try and stay behind. I did a coin flip for some decisions where you can't choose a neutral option and it forces you into one of them. Mm-hmm. Coin flip determined that even though we saved the crew who was abducted, they died because I refused to give them another squad mate to escort them back to the ship. That was a coin flip decision.
Just like, no.
Yeah, pretty much. The only people who survived were Zaid, Tally, or I'm sorry, not Tally, Zaid, Garrus, Morden, and, oh man, I can't remember the fourth. There was a fourth person, though. Those were the only survivors, along with Shepard and Joker.
Interesting. Interesting. That makes me wonder how some of the stuff's going to play out in 3.
Yeah, it's going to be a disaster, especially because I'm not going and doing extra things that like I don't need to do.
Right.
And we're going to start that stream tomorrow. It's Saturday, the 18th, when we're recording this, and I'm planning on streaming that tomorrow. I'm streaming every weekend. I'm trying to between going out of town on weekends back and forth. But follow me on Twitch and Twitter at N7 The Legend so you can catch Neutral Shepard entering Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, go watch that stream. That sounds like a lot of fun. You guys know where my stuff is, robotsradio.net, for my shows like the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, where you can look up Pelennor Whitestrake or any of the other wacky lore from that stuff. But thank you for joining us. And if you are looking for other podcasts, that's a great place to find other shows like this one and many, many other creators, not just me and Sam. So go check that out, robotsradio.net. We'll see you next time. And stay safe out there in the universe and try not to engineer any human hybrids. We'll see you guys later. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.